It's called swine
flu. I hope not. Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, April 29th, 2009 session, morning session of the Portland City Council. We're glad that you're here. Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Adams?
Here. First, we do communications. We have five people signed up today. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 497?
Request of James B. Lee to address Council regarding cost overrun on New Selwood Bridge.
Good morning, Mr. Lee. We're glad to see you back. Hope you're well.
Mitchell Street. I speak only for myself. Thank you for hearing me today. When I started following the Selwood Bridge project 2 years ago, there reported cost was $80 million. Last fall, when the policy advisory group, of which the mayor is a hardworking member, came to its conclusion, the price had risen to $334 million. And this was somewhat perplexing. And in fact, this became consternation several months ago when TriMet issued a $134 million budget for the beautiful model of the beautiful bridge, which you see outside this chamber. So this bridge is basically the same as the New Selwood Bridge, two lanes, wide side paths for pedestrians and cyclists. The only difference being that the TriMet Bridge has to handle hugely heavier loads than the Selwood Bridge. So with this thought in mind, I went down to the Oregon Transportation Commission meeting 2 weeks ago and asked basically, what are we getting for our extra $200 million at Selwood that TriMet isn't getting for its bridge? And I elicited a very strong response from Ms. Gail Achterman, who is the chair of the commission, and she said she was so much concerned with the same thing that she had charged her staff with trying to identify benefits for regional transportation for this extra expenditure. And her answer was that we are getting nothing for that extra $200 million. Furthermore, she asked Mr. Jason Tell, who is the administrator for the Portland region, to speak to me about it afterwards, and he said yes, that in fact $80 million was a very realistic figure for a complete, for a very functional, thorough Selwood Bridge, new bridge, not a rehabilitation of the old bridge. So this is extremely perplexing. In fact, it's outrageous in one sense. When you consider that Multnomah County is now heavily cutting law enforcement, human services, we're all concerned about schools and the Oregon Health Plan, and that is $250 million. I think this is basically a version, Oregon's variation on Alaska's famous Bridge to Nowhere. We certainly need a new Selwood Bridge. Everybody agrees to that. But where this extra $250 million came from is hard to tell. I think this whole process, I hate to tell the mayor this because he's worked long and hard on that policy advisory group, I think the whole Selwood Bridge project is going to have to be rebooted. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Item 498?
Request of Lisa Lee Iacuzzi, not a good queer, to address Council regarding demanding justice.
Good morning. Welcome to back to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
You just need to give us your name and you'll have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Lisa Lee Iacuzzi, and I am not a good queer. First of all, I'd like to talk about the sit-lie ordinance that's coming up. I know Mr. Leonard doesn't have a problem with that and believes in humanity, and I'd like to thank Randy Leonard for his support and homeless people. I'm not happy with the first 100 days of your office. It's not been good. You got a lot of plans that want a lot of money. You could do something really effective that doesn't cost anything except your heart. I'm asking for your heart. This is no money involved. I understand if I was a business owner, I would not want people hanging out in my business. But if I'm homeless and I need a place to sleep and I'm sleeping and I get woken up by the police and criminalized because I'm poor, is not humane. Mr. Saltzman, I believe that you're in charge of the police department or have some type of supervision. The police themselves supported our protest last year. They even gave us pizza. The police are tired of the bullshit. They know, the police know it's not right. Why don't you know it's not right? Mr. Fish, you work with homeless people. Are you kidding me? I'm not going to get your vote. I ask for compassion. I ask for humanity. It's not right what's going on. I'm asking for a modification. I understand why you need the sit-lie ordinance. I totally agree with some of the issues around it. I don't care who's paid you. I don't care who your constituents are. I don't give a shit. All I know is your first 100 days has sucked. And it's going to get better. I need some heart. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Carla, can you please read the title to Council Calendar Item 499?
Request of Crystal Ilinski to address council regarding housing rights and proposed budget cuts.
Is Crystal Ilinski here? Oh, yes. Hi, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
You only need to give us your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay, my name is Crystal Ilinski. Good morning, commissioners and fellow citizens, everybody. On March 25th, a month ago, four people came to address the City Council regarding housing and tenant rights, specifically at Central City Concern, but ultimately all over Portland. Understandably, I thought it was an agenda item, considering Portland's chronic homelessness issue, burst housing bubble, and one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. On top of it all, the proposed 2009-10 budget for the Office of Human Relations, Office of Planning and Sustainability, Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and Bureau of Housing and Community Development makes unbelievably drastic cuts or continues meager funding at a time when, in fact, major increases are needed. To build a strong citizen-fed, community-led city, we need programs such as the Neighborhood Mediation and Resource Center, Small Grants Program, Green Building Outreach, Community Gardens, and Food Pantry Coordination.
Pam, could you turn your phone off for a sec?
I need to call Jean's Place because I'm number 9 on the list, and they told me to call.
It's causing some havoc with the mic.
Hello? Okay. What happened to the Vision into Action 2030 plan? What about the 10-year plan to end homelessness? You can rightly understand why, when I arrived to the City Hall and found no sign-up sheets outside the council chamber, I approached Sam Adams in the hall and asked him to call on me in the audience to speak. About what, he asked. About homelessness and housing, of course, the most pressing issue of the day. His reply, I have a lot of other important issues to deal with. He did not call on me that day. A month has passed and we've wasted precious time pushing through Major League Soccer and baseball stadiums, a 24-hour entertainment center, a gargantuan blinking neon rose, and the sex scandal that keeps on giving. I would like to revisit that day. I so naively believe that City Hall was ready to listen to the oppressed. So zoom back in time with me. It's the 25th of March. I'm reading what I wrote on that day. 2 weeks ago, I was listening to the local radio station when I heard the voice of a former colleague from PSU. The topic was intriguing and very, very timely. I'm number 55 on the waiting list for the Butte Transitional Housing. I've been calling on a weekly basis for 2 years to get on the list and waited in line at 5 in the morning on the December day Central City Concern finally opened it. Since then, I've been required to report to their office in person every Friday to stay on the list. I cannot leave town or make other appointments, much less go to work on Fridays, the ultimate catch-22. Over the years, I had heard about poor living conditions and treatment of the residents in cities' transitional and subsidized housing and shelters. I never thought I'd have to experience it firsthand, but after 2 years living with a slumlord, dealing with harassment and discrimination, confusing legal procedures, and limited options due to gentrification, I found myself on the streets like many others. I called the radio station to share my story, but couldn't wait long because of the line of women in the shelter waiting to use the phone. Here's what I wanted to say. I'm appalled at what I'm hearing, at the abhorrent conditions and lack of tenant rights, not because I don't believe it, but because it's still going on so long after the 10-year plan to end homelessness, when I thought the city had these issues in their sights. I'm calling you from Women's Warming Shelter, which took months for me to get on the waiting list and is closing in a week, right after the third bed bug spraying in a month. Please let me continue. I'm on a million waiting lists, and I know the Rose City resource like the back of my hand. Being homeless is a full-time job, and my health and hope are waning. I'm finally up for a place at CCC's Butte Building and TPI's Jeans Place, but I probably just lost it right now. And I'm dreading it, unless, Commissioner Fish, you have news for me. My Section 8 voucher was supposed to come 6 months ago. It frustrates me the Portland City Council is wasting our taxes on the soccer stadium, the Living Green Building, which is $2,000 a month in rent, and a 12-lane bridge. When they do get grants, it's for Homeland Security or the Joint Terrorist Task Force under different names. And meanwhile, we're less safe. The Oregon Guard is going off, and we're being treated horribly by the police.
I need you to wrap up.
Okay. Portland cannot be the nation's most progressive city as long as it ignores the underrepresented and oppressed. Housing is a human right. Portland residents, no matter what their economic situation, should come first, not the PDC and the PBA, who favor big business and big developers. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 500?
Mm-hmm. Request of Stuart Emmons to address Council regarding Portland as a national leader in design and creative services and sustainability.
Good morning, Mr. Emmons. Welcome to the City Council.
Morning, Mayor and Commissioners, and thank you for seeing me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope mine's probably going to be a little trivial from the statements that were said before me, but I have a handout that has a golf ball teed up on it that for your information, and inside of it are it's talking about Portland becoming a seeing itself as a sustainable capital, a design capital, and how to get there. And I have pictures of Penn Station, pictures of a 1960 Corvette, and the golf ball on the front to try to make my point. My words are also kind of focused on Memorial Coliseum knowing that jobs and spending priorities are obviously related, and spending for housing and schools being a priority. We're teed up to become a sustainability and design capital, which will result in sustainable jobs. We'll be judged by our actions, not just our words. So coincidentally, on the front burner is the Memorial Coliseum. And what I'd like to ask is that we do something doable, very cost-effective and popular, and save Memorial Coliseum. It is the right thing to do for sustainability. Demolishing Memorial Coliseum will make us a poster child for bad sustainable practices. As far as the money goes, I've heard, and maybe you've taken tours with others, it's too expensive to remodel Memorial Coliseum. It's a mechanical system, the roof, you know, on and on. Maybe that's a little short-sighted. Business people sometimes miss the best business deal. And maybe creative minds and government visionaries can see the best solution. It's losing $200,000 to $500,000 a year. It's peanuts. It's very, with a new management structure and a new manager, I really think we can put that building into the black. So Memorial Coliseum is one of the top arenas, and maybe the top arena in the country. When the curtains open up, the space inside is unbelievable, and I didn't really realize that until I looked at the pictures, and you'll see one in here. And that could be a nucleus for a Rose Quarter that we haven't envisioned before that could be extremely successful. So I think there we could build a Rose Quarter that is truly green, active, creates jobs, and has a lot of community support. And just one other sidebar in my remaining time, even though I don't want to get into the baseball sighting, baseball stadium sighting, I think there have been a lot of ideas out there, and the Expo Center up in North Portland seems like a really good thing to take a look at. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Emmons. Really appreciate it.
Mayor, may I just address two quick points?
Yep.
First of all, thank you for this document. I mean,
you're welcome.
I assume you did it in-house.
I did it in-house yesterday.
You know, I just want to say there's the debate over Memorial Coliseum has stimulated a lot of good ideas. It's also taken us back about 5 years when a group of PSU students came up with five uses for Memorial Coliseum,
yes,
including a terminus for a high-speed rail,
mm-hmm,
a headquarter hotel, a sustainability center, and an athletic complex. All of those seem to me things that we ought to at least consider,
mm-hmm,
even if we can't fund them. We ought to consider them.
That's always been the problem.
And I appreciate that cost is an issue. To me, the issue is not whether it's a beautiful building or an ugly building. I happen to think it's a beautiful building. I have a colleague who thinks otherwise. But I don't think that's the issue. I think it's what's the best use for the building.
Yes.
But I will just point out historically that you have a picture of Penn Station, the old Penn Station, which was one of the most important architectural structures in the country, demolished to create a new Penn Station, which is one of the ugliest public spaces ever conceived. And it is of some note that the city of New York is planning to move Penn Station across the street to a historic structure, which is a post office, in partial recompense for the mistake that was made in demolishing a historic building, that their plan is to go back to the future and move it into a historic Farley post office and recreate something great. So I would just hope that in our debate and our discussion on this, we do at least consider alternatives. And I want to be very clear. I don't have a fixed idea for what should be done with Memorial Coliseum. But I hope we have the time to consider what the options could be.
Good.
So thank you.
Thank you. Good comment.
Thank you very
much.
Thank
you very much.
Carla, can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 501?
Request of Carol Van Dyke to address Council regarding making our city and state more sustainable.
Ms. Van Dyke is not here. So let's proceed to the consent agenda. Is there anyone in this room that would like to pull any items from the consent agenda? We had no prior requests for items to be pulled from the consent agenda. So Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a two time certains today, one at 9:30, one at 10 o'clock. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item, time certain 502?
Adopt a comprehensive update to the green building policy for city government facilities to reflect advances in green building.
Thank you. Portland is one of the first in the nation to adopt a green building policy for its own facilities. Today, we will review proposed updates to that plan, and to make it raise the bar for ourselves and to clarify how the policy is to be applied. These updates will reinvigorate our efforts to improve the environmental performance of our existing buildings. Today, we're going to hear from Parks, Water, and the Office of Management and Finance on their experience with the policies and successes to date. But first, we're going to hear from Susan Anderson, who's the Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, to give us an overview. Susan.
Good morning. And with me here, as Mayor Adams just said, are Zeri Santner from Parks, Tom Feely from the Office of Management and Finance, and David Schaff will be up in a minute, the Director of the Water Bureau. Last summer, Commissioner Saltzman and then Mayor Potter directed the old Office of Sustainable Development to convene the other bureaus to look at the city's green building policy and to make new recommendations. So we're here today to do just that. We'll provide you with a summary of some of the great things that have gone on over the past few years and provide a recommendation for ways to enhance and improve on our green building policy. This will ensure that the city remains a leader in energy and water conservation, green building, solar, biofuels, and other technologies and practices. We'll continue to be a model and to quantify our impacts so that businesses locally can learn from us and other cities around the world. So to tell the story of where we've been, I need to go back in time, back to 2001. At that time, the city was one of the first of a very small handful of communities to adopt a green building policy. I remember coming up here and bringing a video of the mayor of Seattle who had actually adopted a similar policy the week before. And I needed that because I needed to convince the council at that time that this was important and that other cities were moving on this. The policy required that we meet the LEED certified green building standard. And LEED at this point is something that you all know about, but at that time I had to talk about it over and over and over again and emphasize the importance of it to city government as a change agent. So Commissioner Saltzman was the engine behind this approach of LEED. 4 years later, in 2005, we updated the policy requirements. We moved from LEED certified to LEED gold as the standard. We set, in addition, benchmarks for water, efficiency, waste, and energy conservation, purchasing, and site development. So what's happened since 2001? Well, unlike a lot of other cities where the focus on LEED in their communities has predominantly been the public sector, in Portland, what's happened is because we also have requirements related to with the Portland Development Commission that require LEED certification if you get any kind of financing TIF funding or anything, you need to also meet that. And what's done is sort of begin a revolution of there's now 150 buildings in Portland either completed or underway that will be LEED certified. The city has three. So that's all that we haven't done a lot of building, and these folks will talk about those in just a moment. We've also completed some great green tenant improvements, so we aren't building a lot new, but we have taken a look at our own facilities, the fire stations, three different fire stations, our city fitness facility, and others. We've added 27,000 square feet of eco roofs on the city-owned properties, and I was adding up the ones that are coming in the next few years, and so that means very soon we will have an acre of eco roofs on city facilities. A couple other highlights include that BDS, Development Services, has implemented process management for all LEED projects in the city, and they've also created an alternative technology review committee, which has really helped in being able to bring new technologies in and try those out. Also, my office partnered with the Bureau of Purchases to provide multiple trainings and workshops for city staff in many, many different departments on green building and the city's policy. So to tell you more about what's happened, I'll let these two go ahead, and then David Schaff will come up.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the council, Zary Santner, Director of Parks and Recreation. We are one of the two major developers in the city government. By we, I mean Portland Parks and Recreation. The other one is Office of Management and Finance. And we are also the largest landowner in the city of Portland. And Portland Parks and Recreation is very, very proud to be in the forefront of sustainable design in the city government. We have a long history of sustainable practices, which began many, many years ago, almost two decades ago, with our integrated pest management approach and our water conservation through a central Maxicom system for irrigating parks. However, our most recent successes are focused on new constructions. As many of you know, the East Portland Community Center pool opened very recently, and we are very, very proud of the fact that it is that facility has achieved or is almost to the point of achieving the LEED Platinum certification, and much credit goes to the efforts of Commissioner Saltzman, who worked tirelessly to get investors so that we could have photovoltaic cells on the roof of the building to provide electricity for the building. We, about 2 years ago, completed the University Park Community Center. Its renovation and expansion also has achieved LEED certification for our green building strategies and construction practices. 5 years ago, we renovated the Wilson Pool, which is an outdoor pool in Southwest Portland, and that was the first, in addition to many, many sustainable features, it was the first pool in Portland that one of the pool was is being heated through solar panels. Within our bureau, we have recently completed greenhouse gas inventory of our facilities, which has led to a climate action plan for the Bureau. And this plan is going to guide our green building practices. We have created a challenge for our employees. It's a conservation challenge by which we intend to reduce our facility resource use 25% by the year 2020. And the first phase of that is going to focus on five major community centers. Our community centers consume 50% of our total water and energy use. So we are very much in support of the aspirational language recommended that all existing city-owned buildings pursue LEED existing building operation and maintenance, which is known as EBOM, at a silver level certification. I need to point out that many of our facilities are old, and a lot of the fixtures and facilities within each building will require major upgrade in order to meet that standard. There are prerequisites for achieving that EBOM silver level. And we are going to come back to you to ask for your financial assistance so that we could achieve these goals. But we look forward to that. And I know this is something that you have been supporting, and we're very, very appreciative of that. So in conclusion, the Bureau's sustainability plan ensures that all of our facilities are designed, built, and managed to promote a sustainable future, and green building practices are certainly a key component to achieving this goal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Feely.
Good morning. Tom Feely from the Office of Management and Finance. We were active participants with planning and sustainable development in the update to the green building policy. We're definitely strong supporters of it. I think our probably most visible sustainable project has been the eco roof on the Portland building. Unfortunately, it's not available for the public to see, but I'd certainly like to invite you or your staff to take a tour of it if you haven't seen it recently, because it's really filling out nicely. We're also working with the Bureau of Environmental Services currently on the eco roof for this building. In addition to that, we've used the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's Green Improvement Guide, Tenant Improvement Guide, on several projects, including the recent upgrade of our internal city shape facilities. I don't want to repeat what Zeri said, but we're strongly committed to it, and it's really going to guide us in the future, and we fully support it. Thank you.
Mr. Schaff.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff, the administrator of the Portland Water Bureau. The Water Bureau has been a leader in the city's efforts to incorporate sustainable practices into our everyday business. We've converted our entire construction fleet to B99 biodiesel. We're installing a solar generating facility at our groundwater pump station, and we're installing micro hydro turbines at our Vernon pump station. We use recycled paint from Metro on all of our concrete tanks. I'm here today to express the Bureau's support for the city's green building policy. I also want to share with you our experiences and our accomplishments since the policy was originally adopted in 2001. Like OMF and like Parks, we like to brag about our firsts, and we're proud to be the first Bureau to be constructing the city's first LEED-certified major renovation of an entire building. That's our meter shop, where we do testing, calibration, and rehabilitation of our water meters. We expect it to achieve a LEED Gold certification. It'll be completed sometime this year, and it incorporates a number of green improvements, and those include energy efficient lighting and HVAC improvements that we expect to reduce energy use by 35% to 45% per year. We will be reusing and recycling the water that we use to test the water meters. That'll save us approximately 50% over our previous facility. Solar generating equipment on the building will provide approximately 10% of the normal electrical load in the building, and the solar hot water system should provide us 100% of our water heating needs for 5 to 6 months of the year. The updated green building policy promotes using green building principles in the city's ongoing asset management programs as well. As we plan ahead to improve our pump stations, for example, we're going to be looking at opportunities to install more efficient pumps, programmable thermostats, and incorporate solar generation. In almost every type of facility that we own, we're confident there are opportunities to make green improvements. For example, by optimizing the efficiency of the Fulton and Carolina pump stations, we've decreased electrical usage in those facilities by 17%. We now have 3 of the 11 certified employees with LEED professional accreditation in the city of Portland. We hope to have several more in the upcoming year. This training helps the Bureau to more readily incorporate green practices into our CIP projects, as well as improve a wide variety of our operating practices and our equipment choices. It also gives our staff the ability to be better educated consumers of proposals and technologies that are brought to us by contractors and vendors. We take the city's commitment to sustainability very seriously. We believe green building practices will save money over time, reduce energy consumption, reduce waste, and improve the health and well-being of our employees. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all for your leadership in this important area. We have another panel. Okay. What a novel idea.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Elisa Kane. I am the city's Green Building Coordinator, and I will try to avoid acronyms at all costs here. So last summer, I convened staff from 10 bureaus to make these updates to the existing policy. And what we really wanted to do was set out was to clarify and enhance the policy so it reflected industry advancements. What we ended up doing was improving some of the requirements around recycling, water conservation, and adding renewables. We also added language to minimize waste and conserve water. We made sure we clarified the policy so that it was applicable to occupied structures. That was a question I got often. Is this for pump stations or is this for parking garages? And we really wanted to focus on where our employees are working. And we also wanted to make sure that these projects were funded and staffed at a level that was appropriate to implementing the policy. And then we also wanted to make sure we were getting direction on the historic renovation of any properties that we have, and that's something that the Portland Landmarks Commission is going to work with us to offer advice when we're going to contemplate any removal or major remodel of our historic buildings. And then finally, this effort was really intended to reinvigorate our efforts to look at our existing buildings and try to pursue what is known as LEED EBOM, which is, we'll acknowledge, is an unfortunate acronym, but it stands for Existing Buildings, Operations, and Maintenance. And that's where we really have an opportunity to improve our environmental performance and ensure the health of our buildings and the people who work there. So with this, I think we'll be able to leverage some stimulus dollars to make these improvements and continue the collaboration that we've seen today. And I really do want to acknowledge the work of my colleagues and other bureaus who the project managers and the staff who have really sought out training on these issues and are making us a premier city for green building on our own facilities. So with that today, I also want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and Mayor Adams for their work and support on this policy and propose that we adopt this comprehensive update.
Questions from Council?
So, Ms. Kane, I just have some basic questions just to make sure I understand what we're doing. What buildings would this apply to and what buildings would not be covered by this policy?
So generally, I like to take this on a case-by-case basis, but if we're talking about buildings such as City Hall or Portland Building, for example, we'd want to look at pursuing LEED for existing buildings. Some of our parking garages, I think that's not a good fit for this type of project. Also, our smaller pump stations, some of our smaller restroom facilities. There are things that we can do to improve the environmental performance, but certainly pursuing LEED is not the best use of our resources.
So in the area of affordable housing, we have a variety of financing tools. The city rarely owns an affordable housing development, and we work with PDC, obviously, BACD, and others. We're going to have a new Portland Housing Bureau, which complicates this a little bit. If the city finances a nonprofit development for housing, do these policies apply, or do the PDC Greening Portland's affordable housing guidelines apply, or both?
Well, it's been PDC's affordable housing guidelines that apply in this situation. And although we have been able to support affordable housing projects through another mechanism, which is the Green Investment Fund, which is in its final year, but just recently announced yesterday that we were able to support 2 affordable housing projects that should be coming online.
So there's an interesting question here, because as of July 1st, we're going to have a new Portland Housing Bureau, which brings the housing folks from PDC and transfers them over to a new bureau with the Bureau of Housing and Community Development. The Greening Portland's affordable housing guidelines developed by PDC and stakeholders, I guess, would technically apply to those developments, but the city of Portland would now be in the lead in terms of developing and financing those projects. So do we potentially have a conflict?
I think they're mutually compatible. I think that this one, if we look very narrowly at the application of the policy for city-owned facilities, that this would apply to the ones that we own, manage, and occupy. The ones that where we're financing, the way it's been so far has been that, you know, the Portland Development Commission takes the lead on that. They have been actively revising those green affordable housing guidelines, and what they're trying to do is acknowledge that we want to see some sort of long-term environmental performance and improved occupant health. So I do feel like they're distinct policies and that we're not crossbreeding here.
And that's helpful for me. And so when the ordinance, the resolution before us talks about in the second from the last resolve that the city of Portland shall finance and staff its green policy. So we're talking at least today about buildings that we own and operate, not buildings that we finance like the affordable housing portfolio.
Correct.
That's helpful, and that's helpful for now. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I guess that raises some interesting questions, I think, as Commissioner Fish has pointed out. But so I guess I want a little clarification. It seems to me if housing finance shifts from PDC into the Portland Bureau of Housing, that the same, at a minimum, the PDC greening affordable housing guidelines should apply.
That is correct.
Okay,
yes.
So there's no misunderstanding on that.
Right. They will be applied, and they're also going through an update right now to reflect the...
Oh, it wouldn't be PDC financed any longer, but...
Correct, yes.
It would be at a minimum, except as I read your report, they have not been finalized. So there's an independent process with stakeholders at PDC, which after reading your report, I now think I'm going to have to get involved with, since they're going to be the guidelines which govern the new Portland Housing Bureau.
That's correct. Thank you.
And I would Commissioner Fish, I would welcome that. I know there are unique situations as it relates to financing housing, so I'd welcome your thorough review of that and report back to us whether we need to accommodate or make any specific sort of acknowledgement of that in our policy.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And I want to be clear. We want to bring our affordable housing development to the highest standards of green building that can be reached within the financing limitations. And for example, this council challenged us on the Resource Access Center to go for gold. I think we're actually going to go for platinum just for the hell of it and set a national standard on that. But there's a cost involved. And one of the things that we always have to deal with is people say, well, you know, where can you trim some dollars on the overhead? The Resource Access Center is a $29 million investment. We could take a few million bucks out in the front end and strip it down to get rid of LEED altogether. We know that's not what this policy and this council wants to do. We also know that investment in the front end is going to bear enormous dividends over the long term. So we have to remind people that it may be a few more dollars at the front end, but the savings accrue throughout the project. But these are delicate issues, and particularly during times of scarce resources. So I thank you, Mayor. We will engage the council on that.
The discussion from council. Thank you very much for all your great work.
Excellent. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Has anyone signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on council item 502? All right. This is a resolution. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish?
I'm pleased to support the resolution, which contains important aspirations for our green policy agenda, and our green policy agenda and our sustainability agenda is what gives us now both a national identity and increasingly an international profile as a place where green-collar jobs are coming, and the mayor and the governor are successful, and perhaps someday we'll be the hub of the electric car industry in this world. So these are important policies and guidelines. It's a work in progress, and I take seriously the challenge of finding the right mix with our affordable housing projects that the city funds indirectly but doesn't own, so that we can continue to bring the standards up for all housing in our community. Pleased to support your good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank the mayor and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for their outstanding work in bringing forward an update to our green building policy. one that's timely, one that certainly, hearing from the bureaus, it is very different from 2001 when we first brought this policy forward, when it was, you know, looked upon as people didn't really understand the importance of this, both in terms of doing better by our environment, but also establishing the opportunities for businesses to gain expertise in designing and building green buildings. And then also our ultimate goal is to have companies that manufacture the stuff that goes into green buildings right here in the Portland area. And I think there's been substantial progress in the last 8 years on all those fronts. But, you know, I'm particularly pleased about the park's good work on the East Portland pool. It's really outstanding, that Platinum, the Water Bureau, and OMF. It's a beautiful eco-roof. I have been up there to tour it, and it's great. So I think all these things are just a tremendous effort to continue to marshal our desire to save and protect our environment and our climate, but and with the opportunities for economic development and jobs here in the Portland area. So once again, congratulations to the mayor and everybody. Please to support this policy. Aye.
Leonard?
I appreciate your good work. Aye.
Fritz?
This is excellent work. Thank you. Aye.
Adams?
Well, I just want to thank the Bureau leadership. I want to thank all the private sector partners that have been involved with this, especially, and I want to thank the Bureau of Planning and now Planning and Sustainability for helping to, and your efforts to help us lead the way, but I also want to underscore recognition for Commissioner Dan Saltzman. He did the heavy lifting on this update, of which now I take, hand it off to me, take and run with, and we'll do so with enthusiasm, but thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your great work in this leadership in this area. Aye. Council item 502 is approved. Carly, can you please read the title for Council Calendar item 503?
Accept report of ACT for ART, the Creative Action Plan for the Portland Metropolitan Region.
Well, last time we had this topic before us, we filled the council council chambers with supporters, and we're going to spare you that testimony today, but just to know we could if we wanted to.
Sure, emails no to prove it.
Yeah. Yes, and you've got the emails to prove it. Today, instead,
we have the history to back it up.
Yes. Instead, today, we're going to hear from my key partners on this issue. Before us is Metro Councilor Carlotta Colette, otherwise known as
Lottie.
So I have a much better
for him.
Carlotta Colette, who I work with on a weekly basis. So I in public, I'd get tongue-tied with your name. I apologize. From Clackamas County and Washington County Commissioner Dick Schouten, and my Director of Arts and Culture Issues, Jennifer Yoakum. Jeff Hawthorne of the Regional Arts and Cultural Council and Kathleen Cosgrove from the Creative Advocacy Network are also here to share with you and answer questions as well. Thanks to those of you in the audience that have been supportive. And I'll turn it over to my colleagues.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Jennifer Yoakum. I'm the Arts and Culture Director in Mayor Adams' office. As many of you heard last month with the State of the Arts Address, with RAC, there's good news and there's bad news. Some of the bad news, recently we've seen galleries close in the region, some heritage centers close. Some of our arts and culture organizations are cutting their budgets up to a third in some cases. But with those challenges, we're also seeing lots of opportunities with the federal economic stimulus package, some opportunities there. At the local level, RAC has been doing great work in helping organizations confront the economic situation head on. And our arts and culture community is more organized than we've ever seen. But the really good news is what you're about to see a presentation on is that we've been doing our work at the regional level over the last couple of years. In 2006, with the approval of council, then Commissioner Adams, in conjunction with the Regional Arts and Culture Council and under the consultation of Skyline Consulting and Kathleen Cosgrove was the consultant on this project, began engaging in the Regional Creative Capacity Project. And the results of that project are going to be presented to you today in this creative action plan. And it lays out the next 3 to 5 years of greater coordination, greater efficiency, and a pretty ambitious agenda for the arts and culture community at the regional level. So with that, I'll turn it over to Councillor Collette.
Thank you. And thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Mayor, let's see, Abrams, is that
it? Yes, thank you. I totally deserve that.
Touché.
I deserve that. I'm sorry.
Commissioners, my name for the record is Carlotta Collette.
See, it's a hard name.
It is. I'm starting to use my nickname again, Lottie, because it's so much easier.
Well, I just want to sympathize. I was at Fred Meyer recently, and someone came up to me and said, I know who you are. And I said, okay. You're Sam Adams, aren't you?
Oh. Sorry, Commissioner Fish. So.
Well, as a Metro Councilor, I'm Metro Councilor for District 2, and that includes a small part of Southwest Portland, but also the cities of Lake Oswego, West Lynn, Oregon City, the tiny town of River Grove, my city, Milwaukee, and Johnson City, as well as a lot of unincorporated Clackamas County. It's a fairly diverse, broad community. I want to tell you a little bit of the background of this creative coalition, a creative capacity project, and how I got involved in it. I first heard about it when I was on the Milwaukee City Council. And as all of you know, when you are elected to office in your city, you look around and you think, did we just lose power? No, we're caught. What does my city have that great cities don't have? So I looked at Milwaukee, and I looked at Paris and London and New York, and I thought, well, it's obvious. We don't have a vibrant art scene like these great cities. So one of my first actions was to try to create an art scene in Milwaukee and create an arts commission, which we now have. It was actually put in place right after I was appointed to Metro, but I'd done all the groundwork for it. And we're working towards having a great cultural arts center, sort of like the Louvre or, you know, the Tate, the Met, something like that, but maybe not that scale. But I did a lot of research on the city council of what the role is of the arts in creating vibrant communities. And I looked at Portland and the work that you've done with your young creatives and attracting young artists to the community and seeing the role of the arts as really a community-building tool. And so when it came up that this Creative Capacity Coalition was forming and Mayor Adams asked me to co-chair it, I was really excited because I looked forward to the opportunity to work with your art scene, which is already vibrant, to try to create a region-wide vibrant art scene. So this group started about 2 years ago, first with an assessment of what our three counties' cultural strengths and weaknesses were. And I think you'll see on the screen kind of the timeline, and we've handed out a little bit more detailed timeline of what we did over the past couple of years. We surveyed artists, business and elected leaders, educators, creative professionals. We held town hall meetings. We held roundtable discussion groups, focus groups, promoted an online survey, did some regional polling, which you'll hear about in a minute. Probably around 1,500 people participated in that process, and they helped us create a strategy and recommendations that are outlined in this report, which we're going to talk about today. Altogether, we divided our primary goals into three strategies, three major goals, strengthening our cultural infrastructure, improving access to the arts and arts education, which, as you know, was one of the first things cut from education budgets, and investing in local creative talent, the artists themselves. In a minute, Commissioner Scouten is going to talk more about each of those goals. My understanding is that the Portland metropolitan region's last actual arts plan was developed in 1992, and it was called Arts Plan 2000, so we're due. A lot of progress has been made on that plan, but there still remains probably one of the biggest shouting problems that we have, and that's that we don't coordinate what we do as a cultural community. And so people are left out. We don't take advantage of the opportunities that we could have if we were all working collectively. This plan will help galvanize local artists, arts organizations, local communities, governments, and advocates to help work together on a shared strategy. And that's really what we're here, what we're about today. About 2 weeks ago, we held our first big town hall to to, and there's the picture, to premiere this Arts Action Plan, and it was a very lively discussion. We had about 370 people who attended, and that was the first of really what will be many more regional discussions about this action plan. We'll be holding town hall meetings in other parts of the region. Mayor Adams had said, let's try to make these all along light rail lines so that people can gather at light rail lines. Clackamas County doesn't have its light rail line yet. But if we put off ours until the fall, we will have, and we can hold it at Clackamas Town Center or somewhere. Anyway, Commissioner Skouten is going to tell a little bit more about the details of the action plan.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Collette, Mayor Adams, and the commissioners. For the record, my name is Dick Skouten, Commissioner of Washington County. I represent a good piece of Beaverton, Alloa, Cooper Mountain, and the Reedville area. We've learned a lot about the regional capacity project, and we've also learned how far behind we are. As you can take a look at the bar graphs, we don't look strong compared to Seattle and particularly Denver. And sort of for the sake of full disclosure, I know Washington County, we do a lot weaker than 247 per person. We drag down the collective average. And Seattle, I understand, is looking at efforts similar to ours, so we can anticipate their dollar figures may look up higher than they are currently. We've learned from the scientific focus groups and telephone surveys in the spring of 2008 that there is really strong and consistent support for the arts, culture access, and arts education from voters across the Tri-County area. And the numbers are pretty strong, are strong all across the region, and the numbers in Washington County are not very different from Multnomah County, and Clackamas County, the numbers are very strong too, just a little bit below the first two counties that I've mentioned. So I think we have some opportunities here. Of course, we won't, our Metro Councilor has told us, we have three overarching goals in the action plan, and we won't go very far in the first goal, strengthening our culture infrastructure. If we don't take a look at the $15 to $20 million in dedicated public funding as a key part of that first goal. Now, whether that's going to be a ballot measure down the road or some sort of levy, that's still some ways to be seen. But public opinion research shows that we do have some opportunities, and if you take a look at the public interest piece, you can see some pretty strong numbers, particularly for the willingness to pay a small but I think significant piece. Which is the dollar per month figure. And citizens across the three counties have made it pretty clear that they do value the creativity, the arts culture, and the arts education piece. So I'll talk a little more about the Art Action Plan and how it can help us engage the public dialogue around these opportunities. I should point out, too, that we've talked briefly, I think, about the work that's been done with Richard Florida, but here, I should say, there in Washington County, more locally, we've had work done by Jill Cartwright that indicates very similar findings to those that you typically think of when you think of Richard Florida, that our ability to attract really well-educated, knowledgeable people in the knowledge industry in Washington County really will hang strongly on, and does hang strongly on, the strength of downtown Portland and the cults that are, and the culture that's here. But obviously, you know, to the degree that we can strengthen that in the county is a very positive thing from an economic standpoint. But going on to goal two, you can see that in terms of access to arts and arts education, that all too often in the past, and I know in the Beaverton School District, arts is one of the first things that gets chopped in the school budgets. And we do have some great programs, the Right Brain Initiative and Young Audiences, that we need to continue to promote as much as possible. And those things have pulled very well, too. And number three, under goal three, investing in the creative talent. We all know this region has been known for attracting, as I mentioned earlier, Richard Florida's what he calls a creative class. And under this goal, we've outlined some strategies that will help us to nurture and keep that kind of talent invested in the Portland region. Under each one of those goals, you'll see at least three strategies with 18-month and 5-year benchmarks. I won't go into the details here. You can see that, of course, in the plan and other materials that you've received or will be receiving. But the document and the ARP plan is meant as a roadmap for coordinating, the existing programs and creating new ones. For example, to address part of the first goal, a new nonprofit organization, the Creative Advocacy Network, CAN, was formed to ensure that local arts communities do not lose the gains of coordination that has been seen the past couple of years, to expand the grassroots outreach and advocacy efforts that we're seeing, and to mobilize further and organize the arts community. And CAN is also conducting additional research, polling work, and so forth, I think, in the near future, to see about the viability of various dedicated funding options. As you can see on the screen at the recent town hall that we did in conjunction with CAN, that the CAN will be conducting those kinds of discussions and town halls across the region, in addition to what was kicked off at the Pearl District, and begin the conversations in a very regional way. I know that Commissioner Fish has already met with representatives in the art community about how we can begin to tackle the overlap between the housing issues and home ownership with artists, and that's also part of Goal 3. And again, I want to thank you for all the great work that you've done here in Portland. Clearly, you're the leaders in this area. I look forward to other parts of the region coming along in a strong way as well. Over the next 18 months, Mayor Adams, Councillor Collette, and I will convene a regional steering committee to help keep pace on this action plan, and we'll be providing on setting up quarterly meeting opportunities, and then we will be reporting back to you periodically, and I think in a very formal way, in the fall of 2010. And thanks for your time, and thanks.
Thank you so much for that presentation, and commissioners, for your just so you know, you can get a quick highlight of some of the pieces that the City of Portland is engaging in on this action plan exclusively. We're going to be working in close coordination with the Regional Arts and Culture Council, as well as the Creative Advocacy Network, to do, if you look at your screen, here are some highlights. So a couple of things that we're going to be pursuing in the next 18 months. As Commissioner Skouten mentioned, Mayor Adams will be co-chairing the Regional Steering Committee. That committee, keeping pace on the action plan, I'll be able to report back to your offices at any time. And then also acting as a resource for the Creative Advocacy Network as they pursue the conversation about a possible dedicated funding mechanism. We'll also be doing, you can see the listing here, several other strategies that we wanted, some of them we wanted to do anyway, but it's great that we have the opportunity to coordinate on and also pilot some programs here in Portland and share the results at the regional level as well.
Okay, we will get to questions in just a minute, but I really wanted to thank you all. You've already done so much for the arts, and this community really leads this region. And all of us know that the arts feed our souls, regardless of the economic community right now. And the economic environment is terrible, we all know that, but the arts are still a vital part of ensuring keeping people's spirits high. I mean, if you think of the Great Depression, the WPA was one of the most important programs that came out of it. And we know our children must continue to learn creative skills. We know that creative innovation is still critical to our businesses. For these reasons and many more, government bodies throughout the Portland metropolitan region